flying saucers are real.
They've seen the aliens buzzing our missile silos.
The UFO phenomenon, either we like it or not, is already very much part of our reality.
That caused a compass needle to spin and spin.
And that's where the whole seed for the idea of underground bases at Dulce was planted.
They had very large eyes, and you know, I found their stare extremely difficult to bear.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Podcast UFO. This is Martin Willis. Michael Lau could be joining us in a moment. Today's guest, number 52, is Roger Nygaard. Now, a lot of people send me emails saying they want to hear different guests. Well, I guarantee you've never heard Roger Nygaard on a UFO show before. He is a documentary filmmaker. He's created Trekkies, 6 Days in Roswell, and a lot of interesting films. And I've known him for a while. He has an interesting take for a skeptic on UFOs, and that's coming up after the news. Please don't forget to check out our Facebook page, and you can follow us on Twitter if you like. Those icons are on our website. And also check out our forum. Don't forget, if you'd like to sponsor Podcast UFO's trip to North Carolina for the symposium, we have a page right on our site for sponsorship for that. Well, how you doing, Michael?
Good. How are you doing this week?
Good. What's going on with the news today?
Well, Martin, we have some exciting news out of Britain and China, an interesting photograph, and more. As always, you can find links to the full stories through the show notes at podcastufo.com. And while you're there, you might as well check out those forums you just mentioned. Woman snaps UFO picture over Netherlands castle. HDR photographs of Muiderslot Castle in the Netherlands have revealed a strange, vaguely missile-like object streaking through the sky. An HDR camera takes multiple images at once to capture the full range of light, and this particular camera took 5 images at a shutter speed of 1/250th of a second. When viewed later, the object was spotted. It appeared to be blurred, which implies whatever the object was, it was traveling extremely fast.
Yes, I saw this object. It looks like it has fins, right?
Yes.
And, you know, some people commented on the Facebook page saying that it was an insect. I don't know. You know what it looks like to me? It looks like the description and drawings of what people claimed were the ghost rockets.
It struck me as being vaguely Buck Rogers-esque.
Really?
Yeah.
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 You know, I believe Ben Hansen took a look at these, too, and was impressed by those photographs.
How did you see that? Was that on his blog or something?
I believe it's in the article that we're linked to.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. Yeah, I like when Ben looks at things because, you know, he's really got a discerning eye and, you know, he doesn't put up with a lot of BS. So he's a pretty cool guy.
All right. And also, British airliners encountered some discs. The Sun is reporting that on December 30th of last year, air traffic controllers spotted 6 unknown objects on their radar in the skies over the British Church of Scientology headquarters in West Sussex. 3 passenger jets also saw UFOs at the time. First, a Boeing 777 reported nearly missing 2 silver discs shortly before 9 a.m. local time. The crews of a Boeing 767 and Airbus 319 also saw the objects, although at least one of the crews felt they were man-made and described them as quote-unquote toy-like. Nonetheless, the UK Airprox board investigated the incident, as it does all near misses, and classified it as unexplained.
You know, wouldn't something quote-unquote toy-like be kind of small, like it wouldn't show up on radar type size?
I mean, the old, like, weather balloons that carried radar targets for radar tests, mm-hmm. A lot of those targets were, I believe, only 18 inches, 24 inches across.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if it's the right stuff, it can be fairly small and appear on radar.
I see. Now, what could fly in formation, though, that would be toys? I mean, that's kind of bizarre.
Helium shark toys.
Oh, yeah, the old helium shark from the last time.
Because evidently there's a plague of those over the British Isles.
Yeah, I can almost hear the Jaws music now.
NASA may turn to fusion-powered rockets. In a recent presentation, NASA's Science Mission Directorate Associate Administrator John Grunsfeld stated that the future of NASA space vehicles may be in nuclear fusion. Studies funded by NASA have determined that fusion rockets could get vehicles to Mars in as little as a month. While all of this sounds good, scientists have yet to actually design a viable fusion reactor.
Now, wasn't this something that Stan Friedman was talking about?
Oh, yeah. He's a big proponent of fusion, as is Michio Kaku.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is, it's definitely the wave of the future for viable travel, for sure. And that's what basically what the sun is, right? Fusion?
Yes.
There's a lot of controversy about cold fusion never being possible. And yet, there seems like I keep hearing about these minor little breakthroughs on that.
There was actually just a bit of a stir in the cold fusion field in the last couple of weeks because some Italian, I believe it was Italian researchers, finally got one of the cold fusion, kind of independently confirmed that a cold fusion device worked. It was a little bit out of our purview, so I hadn't mentioned it, and I'm kind of waiting for some more scientists to weigh in, but they're creeping towards cold fusion. But at this point, I'd settle for hot fusion.
Yeah. Wouldn't cold fusion be like something like the Dr. Stephen Greer free energy type thrill that everybody's looking for?
No. But it'd be a lot better than anything we have right now.
Yeah. It doesn't involve fossil fuels at all.
No. What they usually try to do with fusion is take radioactive materials and fuse them together into a new material as opposed to split them into two new materials. And generally, the goal is to end up with a non-radioactive final product.
That would be a nice goal. I think we're getting a little too science here, are we?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right.
So that's all right, because we'll mix it up with a fake alien in a minute.
Oh, good.
But first, Air China jet has a mysterious accident. Pictures surfaced all over the internet earlier this week of an Air China Boeing 757 with a dented nose, which reportedly sustained damage at 26,000 feet and was forced to make an emergency landing. The pictures show no blood or feathers, which seems to rule out a collision with a bird, and some are speculating that the jet collided with a UFO. However, there have been no reports of UFO sightings linked to the accident yet.
Are they sure that it wasn't Rudolph? I mean, he might have been out for a test run.
Well, I'm thinking blood and fur.
Oh, yeah, that's a good
point. Plus, if you've ever seen anybody who hits a deer, you know those things always roll right up into the windshield.
Okay. Now, did the pilot say that he saw anything?
The only report that I had read that mentioned the pilot at all, they said they heard a bang, which could be some kind of depressurization issue as well, but I kind of got the feeling that it was night, so it was dark, but I'm not entirely sure. You know, most of the articles about this just have the pictures and not a lot of information.
Yeah, it's quite an impressive dent there they have. I don't think Mako's going to fix that.
That's not all the news coming out of China, though. The Chinese freezer alien, it has been revealed, was a hoax. And if you haven't seen that, a Shandong man who is only known as Li has been claiming via Sina Weibo, which is a kind of combination of Facebook and Twitter in China, to have found an alien on the banks of the Yellow River, but he has finally admitted his story was a hoax. He got a great deal of attention and ridicule in China, but he stuck to the story, even asserting that DNA tests had proven the body to be alien, until he became the focus of a police investigation. Then he admitted it was a hoax.
Yeah. Was he having Stephen Greer run the DNA test on this? I'm just sorry. I shouldn't say that. So anyway, what is this with people freezing aliens? I mean, can you imagine reaching in for your TV dinner and seeing a full-bodied, you know, alien sitting there?
You know, I think it's weird, too. But you know what I just realized? There was that woman not too long ago who thought she found a dead chupacabra, and she did put it in her freezer, and it was a real dead animal.
Wow.
It wasn't a chupacabra, but she totally did that.
You know, I don't know about anyone else, but I have like 2 inches of freezer space. Where are these people getting these huge freezers to put dead aliens in?
Well, I've got a freezer downstairs, but it's pretty much not full of dead alien.
Oh, that's good to know. So why would this guy claim this, I mean, what does he get out of it? Some type of fame or something?
And you know, I don't understand hoaxers. I really don't. I almost would like to find one to interview for the show just to kind of get a feel of why go through this effort to get maybe a minute's worth of fame in a marginalized field, you know?
I would love to interview a hoaxer. I think that's a great idea. I don't know if anyone ever would actually be up for that. But anyway, yeah, that's a crazy story. And didn't he say how he found it was really bizarre, too?
I thought it was bizarre. He reportedly met, according to the story, he met five aliens on the banks of the Yellow River, and one of them stumbled into the electric fence he had set up to as a trap for wild rabbits, because evidently that's legal hunting in China.
Okay. And so he the alien dropped dead or something right there?
Yeah. The alien supposedly stumbled into his electric fence rabbit death trap and died. And the alien's buddies ditched him, which is, I guess, okay on their planet, and leaving him unsure what to do. So he took it home and threw it in the freezer. Well, I think that's all for this week.
All right, Michael, thank you very much.
Thank you, and I'm looking forward to this interview. I'm a huge fan of Trekkies. So.
Ah, cool. I don't think we talk much about that, but anyway.
Damn it.
All right, I'll talk to you next week.
All right, I'll talk to you next week.
Okay. I'm on Skype with Roger Nygaard. How are you, Roger?
I'm still alive, and so to me that means excellent.
That's good. Now, we talked a few years ago when The Nature of Existence, that's a great film, and I really hope that any of our listeners out there check it out. It's on Hulu. I believe it's on Netflix streaming. Roger, you've done other films that I think the listener would enjoy. One is 6 Days in Roswell. Can you explain the synopsis of that one?
Sure. Well, 6 Days in Roswell was the second documentary that I made, after Trekkies, of course. I followed up Trekkies with the subject that was, to me, was just as intriguing, if not more so, which was the Roswell incident, which happened in 1947 in Roswell, New Mexico, around the 4th of July or in late June of that year. And there was going to be a 50th anniversary in 1997 in Roswell, New Mexico. And I'm always kind of fascinated, of course, by subcultures of people, but I also am a big sci-fi fan. Addict is maybe an appropriate word. So the combination of those two things made this sound really fascinating. You know, the vast, overdone Americana effect of a small town going alien crazy. So we put our film team together, some of the same people that I worked with on Trekkies, and we filmed in Roswell over that weekend when they had this big festival where 50,000 people descended upon Roswell, New Mexico, and it was just curiosity seekers combined with UFO experts. Some of the biggest experts in the field were there, and people who've had abduction experiences and sightings, skeptics, everyone came together for this big festival, and the media was there. It was just this gigantic mixture of people combined with, you know, how a lot of towns, they have their, you know, strawberry festival or corn days. Well, that's what Roswell had. Now they turned this into their yearly festival, so they had a parade and a costume contest and alien beef jerky and alien beer and foods. And so it was just this amazing experience that we documented and captured in this documentary.
And who was there was someone playing a lead role. You kind of followed him. He was such a character. What was his name?
Yes, his name was Rich Kronfeld.
Did he play himself, or was that an act?
Well, it's a little of both, because that is him. He is a UFO enthusiast. He is a sci-fi nut. He is a nerd. But he's also a really funny guy, and so he is in on the joke. He's totally in on going there and being one of the people so that we can get them to open up to us and be themselves and find the humor in this human situation.
Yeah. Now, one thing I haven't mentioned yet, and you are basically a skeptic, and I wanted to talk to you about that because skeptics are always welcome on the show. It's always good to hear other people's points of view. So I want to talk to you a little bit. What are your thoughts? Do you believe that UFOs do exist, or that they do happen?
Well, first you have to define terms. UFO means unidentified flying object. And so
yes,
there are many unidentified objects that we see or people have seen. Now, whether they are coming from another solar system is a completely different question. and different answers. So, yeah, I think there are lots of UFOs. The question is, what are they, the ones that we do see here? That's the next question. That's a much longer answer.
That's basically what, you know, most of us in the field, I think, are looking for the answer. And a lot of people don't just put the name tag that it's an ET existence that's coming here. As a matter of fact, there's all kinds of theories what they possibly are. But I wanted to find out, first of all, if you agreed that, first of all, people are seeing things. And
oh, no doubt about it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, lots of documented sightings, you know, mass sightings, individual sightings, absolutely. But is there any incontrovertible evidence of these sightings that it's something beyond this world? And I have yet to see anything that qualifies.
Actually, I think you'll find a lot of people in the field of ufology that will agree with you. My personal thoughts are for us to jump right on the bandwagon saying that it has to be from another planet. That's really saying that we know what it is. And I personally had a sighting. My first thought was that it was extraterrestrial because I never saw anything like it and nothing made any sense. But the
Why
more
I jumped that leap, though.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know?
I know, but it's I think it's a natural thought. The
yes,
first thing you think of is, wow, that can't be ours. You know, where is it from? It's got to be something else. But there are all...
But how do we know it can't be ours? That's the thing. And
I put
a lot of thought into this since mm-hmm. making this film. And what I've discovered while making the film and after is that most of these sightings, when they are legitimate, they are government experiments. They are ours. If you saw what the government was experimenting with now, you would think it was a UFO or from somewhere else. If you saw a stealth fighter or a Harrier jet 10 years before they were made public, you would have thought you were seeing a UFO. And lots of people did and thought they were. And that's what they, you know, that's how the mythology gets started. That's one way, anyhow. You know, there's, of course, weather phenomena and optical illusions and hallucinations and dreams and all sorts of tricks that are played. But I think the primary source of these things that people see that are beyond mental tricks are government experiments.
That's what your feeling is. In my opinion, it's no different than me thinking that they're extraterrestrial, if I did think that way, than it is for you to actually put it in a box as well. Because who's to say that all of the unexplained ones that are not natural phenomenon are government craft?
Well, you can't say all for sure, you know, but what you can say is, we do know that that happens, that the government is testing things, and people have been tricked many times in the past by government flying machines and government experiments, things that never were put into production because, for whatever reason, they didn't work out the way they thought, but they would have looked like some weird cigar-shaped thing, you know, something that our brain wasn't used to seeing. So, mm-hmm. you know, like you've done and many have done, it's easy to jump to what culturally is within our brains, our imaginations, because we've seen it on TV, we've read about it in books. You know, little green men became big-headed, big-eyed aliens at some point because it entered into our cultural awareness in storytelling. You know, what happened to the little green men? What happened to demons? What happened to leprechauns? You know, we've had these, throughout history, different representations culturally to explain the mischievous elements around us. And right now, that's what's in vogue are aliens. And so that's why our brains leap there. But I think there are some logical reasons to discount the fact that it's possible that there are actual extraterrestrial sentient beings coming here.
Okay, because I was just going to follow up what you were saying with just by simply saying that here we are, a rather young civilization compared to other solar systems within our own galaxy. And we're already out to Mars. And so what happens when, say, a civilization has 100 years more technology than we do, 1 million years more technology than we do? All I'm getting at is I think that it is a possibility that some of what we are seeing could be extraterrestrial visiting us.
You mentioned, like, we're sending spacecraft right now to Mars. And so the first problem that we face is the vast distances problem. Mars is pretty far, but it's not very far compared to how far most of the rest of the stars with potentially habitable or Earth-like planets are away. Most of them are thousands or millions of light years away from where we are. You know, there are a few that are much closer. Alpha Centauri is not far. But most of them are vast distances away. And so we would have to, and an alien intelligence would have to discover a mode of travel that would allow you to traverse that sort of distance. You and I had talked about earlier before when we were emailing, you know, there are things like these hopeful technologies like warp jumping technology or jumping from one part of the universe to another, which is all speculation at this point. But so far, nobody has been able to contradict Einstein's assertion that a body with mass cannot travel faster than the speed of light. Because if a body went faster than the speed of light, it would achieve infinite mass. Let's just say for the sake of argument that some other species did solve the ability to jump from one part of the galaxy or universe to another. You know, first of all, they'd have to be able to do it. They'd have to be able to choose where they're jumping to. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, with a vast degree of accuracy, so they don't land inside another inside a star.
I thought of these things myself.
Yeah, or get destroyed on the way, or their ships, you know, don't malfunction. I mean, my computer malfunctions all the time. You'd have to have perfect technology. But let's just take this off the table. Let's assume that this is possible, even though it's so unlikely, so vastly unlikely from what we know now. But let's say it is. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the needle in the haystack problem. You know, if you imagine there are planets with sentient life somewhere, and if they've discovered radio or other energy wave transmission, their signals are traveling outward from their civilization at the speed of light. And so most of the solar systems, you know, being thousands or millions of light years away, we would not be receiving their signals yet until, you know, it had traversed that entire distance. I mean, our SETI program has been listening to the skies for 50 years and never heard a confirmed extraterrestrial signal. So it's pretty quiet out there. That could be because they're so far away from us that their signals have not made it, you know, across a million light years yet, or 200,000 light years, or however long their technology has existed. It hasn't existed long enough to arrive here. But from what we can tell, nothing has. So knowing that, you've got to search every potential solar system if you were looking for other sentient life, and you'd have to assume somebody would want to do that. But let's say they do, and they did. Since there are estimates of that there are 200 to 400 billion stars in our galaxy, and probably 400 or 500 billion galaxies, there's at least, I think the number is 70 sextillion stars in the visible universe. So how long would it take to search all those potential places? And if maybe, you know, they're doing some analyses now where they're estimating that they can determine which actually have Earth-like planets. Then you can get the number down to, you know, into the billions. But that's assuming that sentient life only would evolve on Earth-like planets. Maybe sentient life that's closer to us would. But then you can't discount that life could, if it's going to arise, it could arise on many different types of planets. So whatever the number is, it's huge, you know. And one way I've heard it broken down is if you imagine all the grains of sand on every beach on the planet.
Yeah, that's the stars, yep.
Right, so how long would it take you to examine every single grain of sand on this planet? It would take an awful long time, and obviously it's way beyond what any one person could do, or even, you know, it would take a huge, obviously huge amount of searching, which you would have to do by going to each one if you're not getting any radio signals to indicate which one was your likely target. So that's the needle in the haystack problem. So let's just put that on the desk. That's one problem. The next problem is the short lifespan problem, which comes from evolution. The concept of evolution is that what allows complex life and sentient life to emerge is that evolution requires short lifespans. If species live thousands of years without dying, evolution would proceed so much more slowly than if a species lived 100 years or less. So a sentient alien's lifespan would probably have to be less than 1,000 years, you know, like more likely closer to what we experience. So they, like us, probably have short lifespans. And so next, you combine that. Why is that important? I'll get to that in a second. You have the extinction problem. 99.9% of all species that have ever existed on our planet are now extinct.
Mm-hmm.
All species eventually go extinct, and humans will be no exception to that. It's just a question of when. And our biggest problem is that intelligence does not seem to correlate with species longevity. You know, at least not yet.
How would we gauge that?
Well, it's the opposite, because we are so smart that we can now destroy ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if you analyze all the possibilities, it's hard to avoid cataloging the problems, this being one. So a species without intelligence does pretty well, generally. I mean, look at crocodiles and cockroaches. They're doing quite well. They've been around a lot longer than we have. And they don't have the technology to destroy themselves, but we do. And we're doing it. You know, we're slowly, maybe not so slowly even, destroying our environment, or maybe creating superbugs through antibiotic overuse. Mm-hmm. Or we have the ability through a high-altitude electromagnetic pulse to destroy all of civilization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a couple of nuclear blasts.
Right.
So having the technology, it's like, you know, Hitchcock's story or Hitchcock's rule of writing suspense. You have to show the gun and then you have suspense. If someone just pulls a gun out and shoots somebody, there's no suspense. There's only shock. But once you show the gun in a movie, it's going to be used because that's human nature.
Mm-hmm.
So there's every chance that we're going to make ourselves extinct at some point. And so that's why intelligence maybe anti-correlates with longevity. It certainly creates an additional problem for longevity. So that leads to the Fermi paradox. Have you ever talked to anybody about the Fermi paradox?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll just succinctly summarize it. The Fermi paradox problem is that the universe has been around for billions of years, which is plenty of time for another sentient species to have come into being. So where is everybody? Right? They mm-hmm. should be here already. And the explanation would be that intelligent extraterrestrial life either does not exist, or it occurs so rarely or briefly that we will never make contact with it, or it's so far away and impossible to reach us, or, as I just mentioned, the extinction problem. Maybe they've gone extinct already. They've made themselves extinct because they got too smart for their own good. I want to break that Fermi paradox problem down a little bit more, though, and show why it's so unlikely that we're being visited by aliens. I'm going to call it the sentient species window problem. Humans, as we know them today, have been on the Earth for about 200,000 years. And if you condense the history of the Earth, which is about 4.5 billion years, down to just 1 year, humans have been here for about 23 minutes of that whole year. So for comparison, you know, I mentioned cockroaches. Cockroaches have been in existence for about 350 million years. So that's about 67 hours out of an entire year. If they last another 350 million years, they'll have been around for 130 hours out of a whole year. That's still not a whole lot in a year. It's a lot of, compared to us, it's pretty good, but it's still not a whole lot compared to the amount of time available. But let's give humans and aliens the benefit of the doubt, and let's go with the average lifespan of all species on our planet, which is about 2 million years. If you take all species, average them out, generally a species lasts about 2 million years. You know, if we lasted another, you know, 1.5 million, that would be pretty amazing. But let's go with that. That would be just under 4 hours out of a year if we took the whole 4.5 billion years and made it a year. So here's one of the biggest problems. Our four-hour sentient species window would have to line up with the extraterrestrials' four-hour window. And so since the universe is 13.7 billion years old, that's 4 hours out of 3 years total that our windows would have to line up with each other if somebody was able, they were able to traverse those great distances and search the billions of potential worlds and find one that had life. So what are the odds that aliens have survived all the problems of extinction? They found the time, energy, effort, motivation to search all the billions of planets. They've mastered near light speed travel or faster. And their four-hour window lines up with our four-hour window. Combining all those things, it makes it astronomically nearly impossible that they're coming here while we're here. That's the argument against it. But let's say that it happened. What if the astronomical odds are beaten? Well, they'd be here already. They'd be, by definition, superior to us? And would they go to all the trouble to come here to help us with our politics or to probe us sexually? More likely, they would see us as like ants, or if you want to be more charitable, like maybe chimpanzees, the way we see chimpanzees. We'd be below the level of empathy or concern for them. Just maybe as an amusement to them, or at best, you know, at best, and maybe at worst, like a pest to be removed from the picnic. Have you read Jared Diamond's book, Guns, Germs, and Steel?
No. Mm-mm.
You should look that up. He advances a theory or an argument that, and supports it, that in every case in human history, when two cultures came together for the first time, the more advanced culture always decimated the less advanced culture. And in some cases, they exterminated them because they saw them as lesser humans, you know, savages, or not worthy of empathy or concern. So if we're doing that to ourselves, we better hope that aliens never do come here, because we're going to be toast. To them, we'll be nothing to them. We'll be ants or chimpanzees. So, but I don't think we need to worry. I don't think they're coming. They won't be, at least not during our sentient species window. The evidence just doesn't support that they are here or have been coming here.
Well, a couple of things come to mind. And again, I'm not saying that all UFOs or even a large majority of UFOs that are sighted that are unexplainable are definitely aliens, you know, from another solar system. Most of what you were saying, especially toward the end, is basing it on the way we act as a society. Yes, we are violent. Yes, we are most likely able to destroy ourselves. All said in our thinking. I don't think it's such an easy task to just say that. And I do agree, once you hit a certain level of technology, you have to, as a society, travel through a sweet spot where you're not going to destroy everyone on the planet through some type of technological advancement. The way humans think, the way we think, we're tribal, we're violent. We're probably one of the reasons that if someone was visiting us, that they're not showing themselves to us, because we react in violence. And if someone was visiting us, they'd probably understand that and stay away, but possibly observe us. I mean, I'm just saying these things are possible. I'm not saying that they are really happening, because I don't know any more than the next person if it's true. It's all just guessing and theorizing.
Or wishful thinking. You know, they're nice stories, they're mythologies, they're fun to think about, they're thought experiments. But it doesn't always fit with logic, because if they came here, it's probably a one-way trip. So why come to just observe? You know, all we have as evidence is what we can study, and we can only study ourselves in our own planet. And we are a product of matter. An extraterrestrial species would be a natural property of matter. They're coming into sentience like we did. So there would have to be some similarities. I mean, we have two eyes because parallax gives you a better view than a single eye. There are reasons why certain things evolve in certain ways. You know, eyes have evolved separately in different species that had no connection to each other, because it's an advantage to survival. So an extraterrestrial species would have to have passed through a similar set of challenges in a difficult environment. I mean, the Earth is a difficult environment. What we call violence is sometimes just eating to survive. One tribe or destroying another tribe who is competing with you for resources. But we call that violent. Having to pass through to a benevolent stage and not become destructive would make you or a species less likely to survive when you encounter another tribe that's more violent than you. So a certain amount of violence is necessary in order to be defensive, to protect yourself from being eaten. Most every animal in the ocean gets eaten. Most every fish dies violently and suffers as it's being eaten by some other fish. That's how it works. That's how evolution works. And we are part of that system. And so suffering is a requirement for evolution. Being in a stressful environment creates a stronger entity or a stronger species. And that's why if you examine all the things that make up a human, all the emotions, the physicality, rage, happiness, love, the ability to run, to think, to throw a spear, whatever. All these things were adaptive, or at least not counter-adaptive. And so that's why we behave these ways. Our culture has changed drastically since we evolved into the species we are on the African savanna 200,000 years ago. And so that's one reason that we are sometimes frustrated by our behaviors. But we only have ourselves and what we can study as evidence. And there's no evidence to support that and I'm open to it. I'd love to hear a better theory, but there's no evidence to support that an alien species would be benevolent when they came here, because benevolence would mean they would come here to help us. I mean, at best, they would see us as a pet, the way we treat our cats and dogs. Cats and dogs, there's nothing to challenge them to be a better or smarter or faster thinking or whatever sort of cat or dog, because all their needs are taken care of until they die. And would we even want that? Would we suddenly want to be cared for and all the food given to us that we need and all the comfortable pillows that we need? Adversity is what challenges human beings to excel. And so it's kind of a blessing that we have in a harsh environment that we exist within. That's what motivates us. So it's why we rise to greater achievement all the time. And there is it's part of human nature to want to look up to the sky or look outward or look somewhere for some benevolent help, and whether it's a god or an alien or a more powerful neighbor or something, it's easier to be helped than to figure it out on your own. But those who figure it out, they excel, they advance. They create maybe a better version of themselves in the next generation by passing their knowledge on to the next generation. So are aliens coming here? I mean, you're right. No one can say, you can't disprove a negative. I can't prove to you that aliens aren't coming here. Through a thought experiment, I can lay out, here's my logic for why I think it's astronomically unlikely that they're coming here. And if they did, we'd be in big trouble. But I can't tell you they're not coming here.
Okay, well, I think that's all fair enough, everything you said. There's a lot of speculation about the 200,000 years of the modern human, whether that's accurate or not. And, that is a total side story that we don't have to get into. But as far as, you are making a lot of sense in a lot of things that you said. But still, I keep falling back personally to the thought of you're still thinking in the way that we are. And it's even though you're also thinking about evolution, but you're thinking about our evolution. And I think that we don't really have the answers on how, say, another life would be further away, how it did evolve, if it would have to evolve the same way or whatever. So I think there's still a lot of questions, and there's certainly questions that I have, and it's actually really fun, talking to someone like you that has a new take on it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you should be skeptical of everything I'm saying. That's just rationality. When I'm skeptical of people and things, which is always, it seems like, if I'm really interested, I'll go look it up and research it for myself. Mm-hmm. Generally, people have hidden agendas when they tell you something or they pass on information. So you're not really getting maybe the best picture of something unless you go and do the work yourself. Most of us don't have the time and energy and ability to go learn quantum mechanics and mm-hmm. check it out for ourselves. You could if you went and spent all the time. It was just a matter of time and resources. But we do take a lot of things for granted and then build upon them. And so what is the truth? Nobody really knows for sure. You're absolutely right, and you should be skeptical. If anybody's listening to this, look up Fermi's paradox. Read about it for yourself. I found that to be one of the most compelling arguments I've ever heard against aliens coming here.
We actually have that right on our home page of our website.
Perfect. Do some homework. Look it up for yourself if you're truly interested. I did a lot of research. That's why, the theories I just laid out to you right now are because I just did a lot of reading and a lot of research, because I myself was very curious about it after meeting so many people who believed in UFOs and making a documentary about them. Although my documentary is more about the Americana, the aspect of this celebration and the humor and the fun of people coming together at this gathering and talking about things.
Well, Roger, thank you so much. It was great to get a different perspective. And it's always nice talking to you. And again, your website is?
Well, for my most recent film, it's thenatureofexistence.com.
And you also have a film coming up on marriage, yes?
I'm working on a similar, yes, that's the new sacred cow that's up for examination. It's the working title is The Truth About Marriage.
So always a pleasure, Roger.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you for inviting me. I'm always happy to share my theories. And I love hearing others' theories as well.
Don't.